What the Tech is brought to you by Backblaze. Unlimited online backups for just $5. No gimmicks, add-ons, or gotchas. To start your 15-day free trial, go to backblaze.com/whatthetech. Hover. Find a domain name for your idea. Go to hover.com/WTT and get 10% off your first purchase. Again, that's hover.com/WTT. Hover. Domain names for your ideas. And by Casper. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/WTT and using the promo code WTT at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How are you doing, Paul? Welcome back.
Thanks. Thank you.
You're broadcasting live from an outdoor place, I assume, right? That's covered in brick. Club.
It's open mic night.
Paul is live in Yaya's and Haha's in Paramus, New Jersey. You could see him on Thursdays.
Hey, Paul.
How was the trip?
A little tired. Yeah. It was great. It was really good. Quick.
Yeah, I bet. For people who don't know, Paul was in Barcelona for Mobile World Congress. No. It's not Mobile World Congress anymore, correct?
I don't understand that because MWC, is that what we're calling it?
The MWC, yeah.
Nobody talks like that. That's stupid.
Paul just came back from it. There's a lot of news. Obviously, we want to talk about HoloLens. Am I the only one really interested in Azure Connect?
Probably.
Probably.
I'm curious why you're interested in it.
A couple of reasons why. A whole lot more. Obviously, it was the big story was the battle of the foldables with Huawei introducing their foldable laptop. Yeah. A whole lot. We have so much to talk about. So I'm going to go. I want to dive in because we only have an hour here, and I'm going to dive in. And I want to thank our great sponsor, and that's Hover. We've been talking about Hover for many, many years here. And I really, really think you guys should check them out. I buy domain names like hotcakes. I have about 360 domain names right now. I got to do the final 10. It could be even up to closer to 400. I buy domain names for everything, family members, everything. It's almost become an obsession of mine. But I've also sold a couple domain names that kind of has made it worth it for me to buy these domain names. And they have a great offer for you guys. Hover.com/WTT. You get 10% off your first purchase. They make managing your domain name super easy, freedom to connect to any web host or site builder, automatically connect to popular web hosts, like I said, in just seconds, and powerful domain management. Also, they don't do the upselling like those other guys. Free domain name privacy is included. It's in the price. You don't have to go crazy. And domain emails. I have to tell you, when I get an email from Paul and the email address is queensexyprincess65, I kind of ignore it.
That's right. That's actually the correct email address.
That's the one to respond to. But when I get it from paul@therot.com, I take it a little bit more seriously. So definitely if you have a business and you're trying to sell something, my wife has a booming Etsy business right now, selling wine glasses, etched wine glasses, and decaled wine glasses. And I finally convinced her to do a domain name with the email address. And I did it on Hover. Super easy. Hover.com/WTT. You get 10% off your first purchase. I want to thank Hover for supporting the show. Paul, where do we begin?
I
want to know about your trip really quickly, and then we'll go into everything that happened. So you flew out to Barcelona. We were talking about this yesterday. It's one of my wife's favorite cities to go to.
Yeah, ours too.
So how was it? How was the trip overall?
It was great. We were only there really a couple of days, but we got a lot in, and of course I had to work too. So I had the Microsoft event on Sunday night. Originally, I was going to go to the show on Monday, but Microsoft scheduled the meetings for me for Tuesday morning. And so I actually had most of the day. I did some work, but I had most of the day Monday to kind of hang out in the city. So when I was working, my wife was walking around and going to cafes and stuff. And then Tuesday was like the long day. You know, when you think about it, 6-hour time change. So I got up at 7 o'clock in the morning. The meeting, did the meetings, got back to the hotel just before noon in time to check out, and we had time to eat lunch and then go to the airport and whatever. But by the time we got home, it was 11 o'clock at night, which when you account for the time change is like 22 hours after I got up. It was the longest frickin' day. But you know, as my wife and I discussed privately, I mean, we got a lot in. We saw some people, did some, you know, did a lot of good food experience type stuff. We don't have to visit sites or anything. We've been to Barcelona a bunch of times. So yeah, we just wanted to go back and see some stuff that we liked, you know, that we knew we liked, places we liked. So
isn't the best experience just doing, like, going to the bars that you like and the restaurants you like and just doing that as your trip rather than having to do the touristy stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. It's I mean, when we do, well, you can do that if you've gone to a place a bunch of times, right? So that's kind of nice. In many cases, like, we'll go on home swaps. And so we're going to be there for 3 weeks. And so there's no rush to run out and see every single thing, you know, in Paris or whatever city you might be in. And so, yeah, these are nice. It was a nice opportunity, you know,
right.
And similar to some of the stuff we had done last year, like we visited Dublin and Paris in the fall. And we've been to those places a bunch of times too. So we can go back and see people and do things. It's nice.
Very nice. So yeah. You went to Mobile World Congress, mm-hmm. WMC. MWC.
MWC, yeah.
Yeah. It does not sound as good as Mobile World Congress.
I don't think that rolls off the lips in any language.
No.
I could be wrong, but I don't think it does.
I want to get away your I want to get your takeaways from it, but yeah. The big story was Huawei's Mate 10. Mate X. X?
X10? Probably. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
That was the big story.
Yeah.
As far as competition for Samsung's mm-hmm. Fold. So, did you see it in person?
Not really. Okay. I walked by it.
It was in a glass.
I didn't get to touch it or play with it. I wasn't there in any official press capacity or anything like that.
All right, so, what's your opinion of it? I mean, just seeing it as far as we've all seen it. We saw Samsung's announcement, obviously. That was last week. That was a big deal. People were, I think the excitement is there for it. I'm just... I don't know how I feel about a first-gen device. I'm sure this is going to be some sort of subset of the mobile market where everybody's going to follow. But the Huawei one looks very interesting. It seems a little bit more complete.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But I think that what you said earlier about first-gen devices is the key here, because these things are very much first-gen devices, all of them, and not just the two that we're talking about. There are some others coming out as well. And there's a couple of things going on here, but I think the most important one is that first gen thing. These are not ready for prime time. These are not going to be particularly interesting devices other than the weird cachet of, oh, look, I have something new and different. They're just not there yet. And so over the next few years, these things will get thinner, lighter, you know, better screens on the outside, especially. That's a bigger problem on the Samsung, but the other big trend here, I think we might have talked about this last week, but this kind of because we did last week's show right after the Samsung event. So, you know, Samsung's got a little bit of a problem here, because when it comes to innovations in smartphones, and especially in display innovations, Samsung has typically, and this goes back all the way to, remember that first Galaxy that had like the curved screen on one side only?
The Edge.
Remember it was on the right? Yeah, the Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge, maybe, I think, mm-hmm. might have been the version. And then the next year they had it on both, and then they did the Notes and all that. I think you'd have to go back that far to the last time that Samsung was the only one to market with something like that. And it was some amount of time before anyone was able to copy it. You know, as I think we talked last week, there's a problem for them now, because Huawei and some of the other Chinese phone makers are moving just as quickly as Samsung, and in some cases faster even, right? So the Huawei device is definitely more mature than the Samsung one, in the sense that it's closer to a device any normal person would want. The screen that's on the front is, they do the folding completely differently, of course, but
it's more of a backwards
that you
fold.
Get, it's backwards, you know, or opposite or whatever, but because of that, what you get when the phone is folded and it looks like a normal phone is a screen that's basically the entire size of the device. And that's the expectation these days. And I think that's one of the many reasons that the Samsung folding phone, the Fold, the Galaxy Fold, just doesn't make any sense this year, because it's a separate second screen that's on the outside only. It's really small. It's like crazy small. And both of them have fairly complex hinges, really thick designs. It's just, you know, the first gen. It's just first gen.
I'm so more concerned over the hinge because we've seen hinges in laptops, right? When a lot of people were starting to copy doing that accordion hinge, like the Microsoft laptop,
the Surface Book.
The hinge had some issues.
Yeah. I mean, I think that things in the mobile world tend to go more quickly than they did in the PC space. So it's not going to be 5 or 7 years or whatever. It might be 2, maybe 3 years before these things are fully mature. And then we'll see. The central idea is a good one. You know, we're going to talk about HoloLens in a few minutes, but in some ways the folding screens, the folding phones are a lot like the HoloLens, right? It's this, it's a peek at the future. The first version is not what you want. It's not quite there yet. It's not feature complete. It's not necessarily very elegant, but you can see that they're going to get it there.
Yeah.
You
know?
These phones have hold almost no interest to me beyond the fact that in the future, these things will be very interesting, especially I'm getting older, right? I mean, you can imagine I'm standing there in a street corner looking at a map. I mean, the ability to open that thing up and have a bigger map, right?
With
potentially bigger is, you know, hugely obviously desirable.
You're on a plane
and you want to watch a movie or whatever.
Something I see a lot regularly, and I'm seeing more and more, are, and guys, I'm this is not an attack at old people, okay? Paul,
Go ahead.
I'm getting my grades, so kids. I'm getting there. I feel like a kid anymore. You know what? 3 years ago, if you and I were having this discussion, I would tell you I feel like I'm 20 still. Now I feel a little bit more beat up. I'm seeing a lot of older people carrying their tablets with them. This is something that I've observed, especially, and I'm going based on New York, right? Manhattan, Queens, you know, the bars and restaurants that I go to. I tend to see older people with tablets at the bar.
Phone.
Dude, because I get it.
They can't read a menu at a bar, you know?
I get it.
There's a beautiful switch that flips in your body, Andrew, when you turn 50-ish, where you can't see small type even if you have glasses on, so you have to get like reading glasses or some kind of a, you know, bifocal thing if you do wear glasses, God help you. And it's just, it's awful. It's inevitable. It just happens to everybody.
I would prefer, if I had the option to have my iPhone, and this is where I'm going, if I could take this iPhone and flip it once and I have an iPad here, I would really much like that. If you know, by the way, I'm not talking about how good of a device. I'm saying the optimal device.
No, you're right.
If this device is great, I would love it.
Two things to that. You know, when I said earlier that this is not something that's going to take 3 to 5 years, or I think I said 5 to 7 years. It is going to take that long for Apple, right? So Apple, unfortunately, they move very slowly, right? And so, but on the flip side, the one thing I will say about, because Apple will absolutely do some version of this, right? And who knows, maybe they'll have a unique take on it. No one has any idea what that's going to look like. But I think we all get the idea that when Apple does do this thing, they will get it right, you know? And at Apple, I think I said this last week, but if not, you know, Apple would never have shipped a device like the Samsung Galaxy Fold ever. That's the type of thing they would have come up with internally. They would have shared it around a table. Everyone would agree this is the direction to go, and that it was years away from fruition, that there's no way we're putting this hunk of junk out into the world. This is not a finalized Apple product. This thing has to be thinner, better battery life, you know, better screen, whatever. And then they would wait until they got it right, you know?
Yeah.
The Apple version of this will be fantastic.
Listen, we saw the first gen iPad. It's non-existent in the memory of people at this point, right? Nobody remembers that first gen iPad. It was heavier, thicker. It's actually unbelievable how Apple has somewhat erased the history of that first gen iPad from history. I mean, it's gone. Nobody will remember that first gen iPad. Everybody remembers the iPad 2. That is the memory of the iPad. That is the original iPad. That is the complete device of the iPad.
Yeah.
I mean,
the original iPad, I don't think I believe it did not have a front facing camera. Did it not have a rear-facing camera?
I don't even remember. That's how it's gone from my memory. And Apple was very quick at erasing that from your memory. I think it was like 9 months later they released. I think the iPad 2 came out The pre-order was the night of the tsunami in Japan, right? Is that, jeez, does, that, okay, does that make sense? I remember, no,
I
that
don't
because
remember that, but yeah, okay.
I remember because I was up to do the pre-order.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
I remember. I think so. You're going back quite a few years, but the year prior for the original iPad, it's gone from history. I think that's right. What's going to happen to these devices. You know, Samsung's foldable device. Motorola has a foldable device coming out, and most likely they're going to rebrand it the Razr again, and because they had luck with that name, and it kind of makes sense that it's a flip. This is going to be an interesting market that we will see grow in the future. This may be a you know, a great merger of tablets and piece and phones at this point. This may be the device that we want. You know, I've said, Paul, you and I have talked about this. I've always said I wish that I could make phone calls on my iPad. The years ago, I would say this all the time. Years ago.
Yeah.
I couldn't even conceive the option of having my phone fold. You know, now we're talking about, you know, making your phone into the tablet.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's going to be so pervasive, I think, at one point that even people who believe that they don't would never typically want a tablet or use a tablet will still, you'll still get this as part of the phone. And so even if you never unfold it, it's kind of there. But every once in a while, you will, and you'll be able to use it. And in that way, it's a little bit like multi-touch on a laptop. You know, there are people who are like, oh, I don't ever need to touch the screen. It's like, well, okay, then don't worry about it. It's in the screen. You don't have to touch it. It doesn't hurt you that it's there. However, you may find over time, you know, that you do want that there, and then you'll use it. And it may change your usage of the thing just by it being available, you know. This has been the dream of the industry for a long time. You know, it's this, the one device that can do it all, you know, and attempts at this have always failed. There's always been huge compromises. As soon as this kind of device enters my brain, my first thought was like, this makes sense for all the reasons it's obvious to everyone. The notion of a tablet and a phone. It's a great idea. The fact that it might evolve into something even more powerful, where it could, you know, now you have a keyboard and you can use it like a computer, is very interesting as well. I mean, you're right. It's that the possibilities for this are not endless, but they're almost endless, and it could disrupt a couple of industries. You know,
do you see Apple entering into this?
Yeah, I mean, Apple is rumored to be pushing the Macs toward their A series chips or some of their Macs, right? I think. In many ways, like the pro level devices will probably stay on Intel for some period of time, if not forever. And we could consider those kinds of things workstations, right? And this is the cars versus truck thing that, you know, Steve Jobs used to talk about. Even though a lot of people in the United States, especially like big trucks, I mean, the truth is what we really need are cars, most of us. And trucks are really specialty devices for specific tasks. And a general purpose computer that you can, you know, use as a phone, unfold, use as a tablet, connect a keyboard to type long emails or papers or whatever it might be, is probably going to meet the needs of most people and could be what today we think of as a PC or personal computer. Like that's the personal computer. So it is literally a personal computer.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen this year. That's the thing. I mean, but you know, there are people today who use iPads as, computers. They can't fold them up and use them as a phone. They're too, you know, so this addresses that issue.
Listen, my friend Bob, he sits at the bar with his iPad and he drinks a Chardonnay and that's what he's using. He's typing away on it.
Yeah. I think I probably took my dad is so technically incompetent. And at the advice of my cousin several years ago, he switched from PCs to the Mac and then got an iPhone. And then he would call me and ask me for technical support help. And I said, Dad, I do Windows. I don't know anything about the Mac, which you knew. And I cautioned you when you said you were going to do this. But in recent, now he's retired. And so he's probably 73, 74 years old, whatever. And he, last year, sometime he was out visiting and he just has a normal iPad. He doesn't have a keyboard for it. He does not have an iPad Pro. It's just like a normal iPad. It's in this kind of ratty old case. It's probably an older one by this point. And he said to me, he goes, you're going to think this is crazy, but I can get everything I need to do done with this iPad. I don't even need a computer anymore. And I'm like, Dad, you're it's not crazy. You got 1 foot in the grave. Of course, you can do everything you need. Like this, you don't really have very complicated needs. You know?
You're not doing Photoshop.
Yeah, you're not solving world peace here. I mean, it's you're fine. But you know, that, I mean, to be fair, I mean, I'm joking about him because he's my dad. But you know, that's probably true of most people, and that's the thing. I mean, if you're a programmer, if you're an engineer, if you're an artist, yeah, you may need a more powerful computer. But for for most people, email, browsing the web, social networks, whatever it might be, you can get by with a much simpler device. And this has the potential, you know.
Absolutely.
To grow into that.
Since we're on the topic of simple, you know what is simple? Backing up with Backblaze. unlimited online backup. No gimmicks or add-ons or gotchas. Some of those other guys. Go to backblaze.com/whatthetech. They have a great offer here. You get unlimited online backup, no gimmicks. Like I said, you can back up your movies, music, photos, videos, projects. All the data gets backed up, over 750 petabytes of backups and counting, over 35 billion files restored. Unbelievable if you think about it. You could recover your data. Listen, backing up your stuff is very important. I always tell people, especially, give you an example. My brother recently was not listening to me and not backing up anything. And you know what happened? He lost everything he had, essentially, on a bad hard drive. You get a peace of mind knowing that your files are backed up securely in the cloud. Back up your Mac, your PC for just $5 a month. You could create an account right now and you get a 15-day free trial. When you go to our link, and that's backblaze.com/whatthetech. Last week, I spoke about this, and a lot of people were excited about Backblaze because they use it. It's always great to hear from our audience that actually uses what we're talking about. I'm a fan of Backblaze, and also they do something cool. They do you can restore by mail, so you can do a flash key or a hard drive, and the restores are shipped to your door, which is pretty cool. Or you could do a restore return refund program where you buy a hard drive, restore, send the hard drive back within 30 days, and you get a full refund. Seriously, back up your stuff. Backblaze.com/whatthetech. So, Paul, anything else that you saw that you thought was cool before we go into HoloLens and the Microsoft Vortex right now?
At MWC?
At MWC?
No, I didn't spend a lot of time at the show, but obviously the two big things there were 5G and folding phones. And in both cases, Huawei factors into both those stories, and Huawei's problems with the United States government, which increasingly is seen as something that is evidence-free of this company doing anything horribly wrong, but whatever. I think that both of those things are futuristic trends that are not really going to be implemented in any meaningful way this year. And so we're going to see 5G phones. We can put, kind of air quotes around 5G in some cases. 5G is not going to be particularly pervasive this year anywhere. And, but we're starting, gigabit LTE is really cool. I mean, the nice thing about the first two gens of 5G is we're talking 5-7 gigabits per second, download anyway. It's going to be a big deal when it happens. It's just not going to be this year.
Very interesting. Let's talk about Microsoft. Okay. HoloLens 2, Paul. The future is here. Yep.
The future is here.
The future is here. This is what I want to talk to you about with that. So I the first time I used HoloLens was at the Microsoft store, and they were doing a demo. Was that the prototype that I did? Do you remember?
No.
Or was
it tethered with multiple cables?
It was tethered.
Really?
I don't remember how tethered, but it was tethered.
Well, it might have been tethered just for a video output purposes. The prototypes look like a Predator headdress from a science fiction movie. Like, I guess the way to put it is, if you used a 1.0 device, in some ways it was sort of a pre-release version, in the sense that it was really only aimed at developers. It was really kind of the developer edition is what we got.
I can't remember. I got to find the date.
Second gen is more refined.
Yeah, I got to find the date for it. But regardless, so you used, you actually did the prototype. And I remember how you were blown away on how the level of view that you had was way better than
the new one.
Well, no. When you did the prototype and then you did the actual one, you said
restrictive. Sorry. I wouldn't say that I was blown away. With the prototype, and this is the tethered version, I didn't think much of the field of view. Like, it didn't bother me, right? But by the time it came to it, like the production version, which is untethered, all of a sudden, I really, really noticed it. And it was like kind of a mail slot view, right? And so the problem with augmented reality is that you have to have some kind of, at least especially in an immersive headset kind of a thing, is there's, I keep calling it a bounding rectangle. That might not be the right term, but there's a rectangle overlaid on your vision. You see the room that you're in, but there's this thing, an overlay. And that's where the holograms appear. And so we have peripheral vision, right? So I can see, even though I'm not looking, I'm looking at you, but at the screen, but I am peripherally aware of the room that I'm sitting in. So if there's a fly buzzing around up here or motion occurs over here, whatever it is, I'll see it, And with the holograms, you can't see those things because they're outside of that bounding rectangle.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have I've described it as a mail slot. That's probably slightly exaggerated, but it's longer than it is tall. It's very rectangular. If there's holograms moving around, and of course you can move your head around, you can lose track of the holograms, right? Or if you imagine a hologram ball bounces from the corner, bounces on the table and does this. If I'm not, following it accurately, you could lose it. It's somewhere in the room and you have to kind of look around for it. And so that's why the field of view is important. It was the limiting factor, I would say, of that first gen device.
Yeah.
The central technology though, right? The thing that displays the holograms, that makes them appear rooted in the world, that fools your brain into thinking that that thing is there in the air in front of you or sitting on a table or whatever it is, and how you can move around it in 3D, like in real life, I guess. If the object is sitting on a table, you can approach it from any angle, any distance, whatever, and it doesn't flicker, it doesn't move a little bit, it doesn't fall partially into the table. It's rooted in real space, right? It fools your brain. It becomes real. And that technology has been impressive since V1. And I think that's why the product came to market at all. Like, they solved that, right? So that was impressive to some degree, for sure.
So now we have version 2.
Yeah.
I want to get your full experience.
Yeah, this is going to require a bit of explanation. So it's really impressive, and for a number of reasons, right? So for one, the field of view is bigger. Microsoft says it's 2x, like twice as big. It feels like it's twice as tall. And that's not, I think what they meant was diagonally. Hmm. So it's, it went from this to this or whatever the measurement is. But the effect is that you can, there's more holograms, or there's more space where you can see holograms. And it really helps, obviously, right? I don't have to explain why that's true. Obviously, that's a big deal. But they really went beyond that with two other things that combine with the field of view and also with voice control that I think really puts this thing over the top. And so, sorry, this is such a long explanation, but in augmented reality, like in virtual reality, one of the things that all of the companies that make these solutions have found over time is that they need some kind of a hand controller, usually two hand controllers, because you need some way to manipulate objects in the virtual space. And in the case of HoloLens, Microsoft originally was hoping to do these air gestures, right? So this is kind of like pinch gesture you do. You try to select things. It's a goofy, unnatural thing. It's still there in V2, but they very quickly found that it just wasn't accurate enough. Like, I want to select this hologram I can see, and I'm, you're sitting there trying to grab it, and it gets a little tedious, and my arm starts getting tired because I don't work out enough or whatever, it's a little much. And so they came up with these hand controllers. So in V2, what they've done is they've added two major new technologies that are super important. One is eye tracking, right? So what eye tracking means is that there's cameras looking at your eyes, and they can tell where you're looking in this field of holograms, and they can tell which hologram you're looking at, right? it's, I'm going to exaggerate this a little bit, but I mean, when you typically with these kinds of things, when you, you know, look around, you kind of, you know, you move your head around, you're like, oh, there's a hologram up there, and your whole head moves, you know. But the thing is, you don't really have to do that with the new version. I still did it a lot because I'm used to it, but you can just, and even now I'm tilting my head, I can't stop doing it. But, you know, you look up to the corner there and you can see the hologram. When you look at a hologram that way, you've sort of selected it in the sense that the system knows you're looking at that exact hologram, not any of the other holograms. So when you do something, maybe a voice command, whatever it is, it knows you're going to, it's going to act on that thing, right?
So it responds, it's able to kind of respond based on your movement towards that device?
On your eye movement.
On your eye movement. Wow.
It literally knows what you're looking at. Yeah. It's like the movie Looker from the early 1980s. Like, it tracks your eyes.
That's right? Interesting.
Yeah. So it's almost like ESP because, you know, you do a simple demo with his balls floating around. You look at one, you say pop, and the right one pops. And you're like, how did it know that? You know, I am looking at it, but there are a bunch of them. Like, how come one of the ones right next to it didn't pop, you know? So that's interesting. The other one is one that I had heard was coming, and it's hand tracking. And so what it does is sort of like the way Kinect used to map your room, and it would draw the outline of where everything was. And you could see that field of dots. You know, they do that basically for your hands. And because your hands are these complex objects that have fingers and you can grab things with your hands and so forth, it has an understanding of what you can do with your hands and where your hands are in 3D space. And it allows you to interact with holograms now in a way that's very natural. So instead of using a controller to select and then manipulate an object, like maybe you'll move it to a new location or resize it or whatever it might be, you can just reach out and grab it. And if you can make it bigger, you can pull the corner of it out to make it bigger. You can grab it and you can put it over here on the table, you know. And so there are four things going on there, right? The bigger field of view, which makes the whole thing make sense. Voice control, which, you know, Microsoft has had for quite some time. Eye tracking, which uses your eyes to understand which hologram you're looking at. And hand tracking, which understands where your hands are and what they're doing. And so you could do things like, I could reach out with a hand and grab a hologram here. I could be looking at a different hologram and I could say a voice, you know, command, and it would interact with that one. And I could be moving with the other hologram while I'm doing it. It creates this kind of, it's just a natural way of doing things. Like there's no haptic feedback. I'm just, you know, grabbing the air, but you're still fooled into thinking you're grabbing the thing because you see it react to you grabbing it. It fakes you. It's the entire essence of the holographic thing is like fooling your brain, right?
Interesting.
And it does a really good job of fooling your brain. And then you have to combine it with some of the other stuff that's going on here because the device itself is much simpler to get going with and to use. In the past, you had to run through this really long thing where it calibrated it, you know, the distance of your eyes from each other and the fit of the thing and where it was in the head. And you would put this giant heavy thing in your skull and it would like wear down on your nose and it was really heavy. And that field of view, the bounding rectangle would be kind of off. And so, you know, things wouldn't be quite in the right place. And you'd have to screw around with dials and, you know, all this stuff. And with this version, you just put it on. It's like wearing a hat. It's all set up. It does with that camera stuff. It does Windows Hello. So the first time you put it on, it will auto calibrate for your eyes. And there are settings, of course, you can configure. But the second time you put it on, it says, well, this is Paul. We know what his eye distance is. So we'll set that and we'll, here are all your apps and here's all your stuff. And it's just ready to go. And it's gone from a very labor intensive manual process to a very efficient, simple process. It requires no training at all. It's very natural. And then you can just go in and do whatever it is you're going to do, whatever the application is or whatever it is you're doing. So it's a really big improvement. I mean, it's really impressive.
Yeah, it's a tremendous improvement. Now this is not not cheap, this device. Obviously they are they're looking at enterprise usage for this, right? They're looking at professional
usage. This is not for
anybody. They had the demo where the doctor's performing surgery with the HoloLens on. I don't know how real of an experience that would be.
Right. Well, but here's that's probably not very realistic today, although we're getting closer to that being possible, right? So the things that have changed since 4 years ago, which is when they first introduced or first announced the first HoloLens, is that back then Microsoft didn't know what people would do with this, right? They literally threw it out there. They made it available to developers. They used to do a lot of demos. Remember, a lot of the early demos were games, right? Not necessarily because they thought that gaming was going to be the primary use case. So obviously, it was a $5,000 device. Who's going to buy this thing to play games? But games are visual. It's easy for people to understand games, you know. And so you see a game where I have a blank wall over there, and there's a virtual hole in it for the, you know, where holographic bats are flying out of it or whatever. Or there's a Minecraft castle on a table, and you can walk around and arrange things and look in windows, and it's all very realistic in 3D space. Those are demonstrations that people understand, you know. But in the intervening 3 or 4 years, various companies have used HoloLens for whatever purposes. I always talk about car makers because I think it's a really neat example. NASA uses it. You know, they're all enterprise, big companies. And today we have an understanding of where HoloLens has been really successful. Microsoft didn't talk about games at all at this event.
Nothing,
because
no.
There aren't going to be, there's not going to be games, right? It doesn't mean that there won't be someday in the future. I mean, Eric Sweeney or Tim Sweeney came up on stage and talked about something that really had nothing to do with HoloLens. But the hint was, you know, maybe in the future there'll be game space in this platform. But, you know, really, we do have an understanding of where this thing can be used. And the HoloLens itself is not, it's not about selling a $3,500 headset, right? Because if you think about a company like Ford, maybe, that has 50, 60, 100,000 employees, all of them are going to probably get a computer. And all of them will be running Office 365, and they'll have access to various Microsoft software and services. Some very small percentage of those people will get HoloLens because they design cars.
Yeah.
You know? And instead of constructing like a giant clay model of a car, they can do it in 3D space. And there's a dozen of them or 20. I don't know how many people design cars at Ford. But, and then there'll be a bigger group that have mixed reality headsets because they just need to look at this stuff, right? So there's a design review, and you can bring in executives and say, hey, we came up with this new car. Do you think it's cool? And they can put on these headsets, and they can view the design that these other guys made. They can open the doors, look inside, you know, see what it's like.
The mixed reality headset.
Yes, the cheaper headsets.
Yeah. You know? Is there any indication that Microsoft is headed in that direction? Because I spoke to someone in, when the announcement was happening, I was sitting with someone that is that works at Madison Square Garden, and he's part of, he's high up in the event coordination. And he was bringing it up. He goes, man, we are dying to get these at the Garden where we could provide these cheaper headsets for a certain experience, like sell it almost like a suite. And you get this unbelievable immersive augmented experience while you're at a concert or an event.
Yeah, it will get there. I mean, it will get there.
Is Microsoft kind of having a conversation regarding that to, you know?
No, I mean, right now they're selling what they have. I mean, they basically have two things that are run off the same basic software platform, but are completely different, right? So augmented reality, you know, you see the room you're in. So you're interacting with virtual objects in real space. In a virtual reality or a mixed reality, really it's just virtual reality, but you're in a completely virtual environment for the most part, although they've introduced the notion of having a window into the real world so you can see out as well.
Take me right out of the real world. I don't want to be there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that HoloLens today is largely for what I'll call creators. You know, there are people, or that's not even the right term. I'm not sure if there's a good term. It's
I know
not
what
just
you mean
creators,
by creator. I know what you mean by
it's,
creator.
It's people who are doing something. They're not just viewing. Like they're making or fixing, or you know, they're interacting with things. You know, and the use cases are interesting. They're not consumer tech. We're not talking about like a shiny smartphone you can bring home and show everybody. You know, it's this is stuff that, again, you know, they're not going to sell a lot of these compared to phones or computers or whatever. But what will be attached to all these things are all the Microsoft services and so forth, you know. Okay. And they supply like AI backend services for companies that need to do whatever they need to do. You know, it's a whole suite of things. And so I think that's really the point of it is, you know, you could get your U.S. Ford. I keep using Ford. I love the Ford example. Like U.S. Ford, you have need of computers and computer software for people. You have maybe you have phones you want to get, and you have back-end services that you use or whatever. And then there's this small part of the company that needs to use, or it would be better for them. It would be more efficient and more less expensive for them to do augmented reality to design vehicles in space, in 3D, you know, in a room.
Yeah.
And the number of those people isn't huge, but, you know, if you were all centralized on Google services, those guys would have to be using a completely different system for their stuff. And for a lot of enterprises, it's like, look, we're already using Microsoft and they have this other stuff, you know? And HoloLens kind of fits into it's kind of a growing group of hardware solutions that are unique to their space. That Azure Connect thing that you were talking about is part of it. Surface Hub is part of it. You know, yeah, I guess you could buy a standalone Surface display and Surface Hub display and put it in a conference room. But really, you're going to use that when your company has centralized on Microsoft software. Everyone's using Microsoft Teams. Everyone's using Microsoft Word and, you know, whatever. And you can come into this room, interact with the screen, teleconference with people who are at home or at some distant location. And it's this awesome thing because it all works together. And HoloLens is the same thing. No one is buying a HoloLens, right, beyond developers. I mean, they're buying HoloLens as part of a broader suite or whatever of software and services and maybe hardware too. It's just part of the big puzzle.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's.
If that makes sense.
No, it does. Absolutely. It's all a. I think it's a very interesting concept that will eventually lead to us all having, you know, really crappy apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And
it won't matter.
Because everything is we have these HoloLens contact lenses. You know,
I'll be in Paris every day of my life. It's going to be wonderful.
Every day. You know what you will still need, though, Paul? You'll still need your Casper mattress because there's no replacing the experience with a Casper mattress. There's no HoloLens in the world that's going to change your experience with a Casper mattress. That's because Casper mattresses are made by humans and designed by humans for humans. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foam and quality sleep surfaces with just the right sink and design. It's designed for you for just, you know, perfectly. If you're moving, if you're bouncing, if you're moving around, it's absolutely great. I like that it's designed by humans, Paul. It's not designed in this virtual universe. Casper's breathable design helps you stay cool and regulates your body temperature at night. I just bought a Casper mattress again. I have two mattresses from them. They're not just a mattress company. Casper offers a wide array of products, from duvet covers to pillows to dog beds, foundations now, which they're a one-stop shop right now. And here's the great thing. Buying from Casper is super easy. You order it online. It's delivered to your door in a box in this very compact box, which is amazing. You don't have two guys shoving this thing all around and banging it all over the place, delivering it to you, which is actually a much better experience. And you get a 100-day risk-free trial, and it's free shipping in the U.S. and Canada. So considering the fact that we spend one-third of our lives on a mattress, it's very important that you were sleeping on a mattress before committing to it, and this is your good experience. I've told the story about how I went to one of these big box stores and they made me lay down and they did this measurement. Your legs are a 2 and your back is a 6 and your neck is a 4. Okay, the mattress that you need is this one. And I spent a lot of money and it was the worst experience for me. And obviously I couldn't return it. And here's a great deal. You get $50 towards a select mattress purchase by going to casper.com/WTT and using the promo code WTT at checkout. That's casper.com/WTT. Using the offer code WTT at checkout, I want to thank Casper for supporting the show. Let's see, Paul. Let's see. What do we have here? I'm trying to open the notes, but my Chrome browser's not. Oh, so Microsoft, at E3, it came out that they're going to be discussing the next-gen console.
Yeah.
I want to touch on this a little bit. Any news from that front? I mean, obviously, we've seen some information come out over the last, I don't know, couple months, but any updates as to where we're headed and what direction we're headed?
No, I mean, all I can do is kind of speculate and just use the past as a guide, because if you look at how they've done this, every 2 years they've revved the Xbox One now, right? So it's original Xbox, the Xbox One S, which added HDR for video content, and actually a much nicer form factor, and then the Xbox One X, which added 4K gaming and HDR as well to gaming. So what's next? You know, what could possibly, it's been 2 years, what comes next? I mean, I think what comes next is what I'll call real 4K gaming, right? One of the issues with the Xbox One X today is because of the design of the system, you as a developer can choose how much of the power you want to use where. And so you might say, well, I want it to always run at 60 frames a second. That means I can't run it at 4K because it's a really complex game. I'm going to run it at whatever, 1080p maybe, if you're lucky, or whatever it is. And so I think the goal for the next gen hardware should be 4K, consistent frame rate, 60 frames per second, you know? And the beauty of that system, assuming that's what they do, and I think it makes sense, but is that all your games, you know, nothing changes. The same games work. They're just better. You know, it's the model they've used all along. I think the bigger news that we're going to see at E3 this year, though, is going to be about the service, because obviously the future of Xbox is what we're now calling this xCloud service. It's the ability to stream games over the internet to different kinds of devices, phones, tablets, probably smart TVs at some point. And this will be the obvious time frame for them to start talking about that. They're supposed to have this thing in market, at least as a preview or whatever, sometime this year. So that will probably happen at E3 as well.
Yeah. We also saw some information come out about the Chromium-based Edge browser this week. Yeah. I saw Brad posted an actual image. It's a yellow E, right? And what does it say on? I forgot what it was on that image.
It probably says can, like canary, like
C-A-N, yeah, probably. Can, yeah,
yeah. So if you're familiar with the way Chrome works, they have different development tracks for the browser, and so you can get early pre-release versions of different versions of Chrome through different tracks, right? So there's a developer track. Canary, I think, is the earliest one. And basically, it was just a screenshot that someone had stupidly put on Twitter that proved that Microsoft was working with a canary version of the Chromium-based version of Microsoft Edge, suggesting that it's almost ready for some kind of a public preview. So, unfortunately, there's no picture of the actual product, because, of course, what we really want to see is the application itself. You know, the icon is fascinating, I guess, but people who are interested in this want to know, does this thing look like, is it going to look like Microsoft Edge? You know, is it, does it share the old user interface? I mean, you know, no one knows. So,
I mean, if I were to guess, I would say yes.
I would think so. You know, as much as they can, right? It's not going to, I don't think it's going to look like Chrome. I don't think you're going to bring this thing up and say, oh, it's Chrome.
Because Opera's using Chromium now, right?
Yeah.
They are. Opera's using Chromium Listen, I think
a few other browsers too.
But this is interesting for Microsoft because they are, they at this point in the browser game, they've lost a lot of traction. They've lost a lot of steam, and I don't know if this is what's going to bring them back. You know, considering is it the Google experience right now with Chrome, or is it the actual browser that we're buying into? I would have said it was the browser we were buying into, but now everything, all my Google experiences are tied into the browser.
Yep. I think it's both, you know, I for most people, whether they acknowledge that or not, I think it is, it's what you're saying. It's the, you know, you get the pass through of your passwords, your account configuration, everything. It's nice. It goes to mobile.
Yeah.
I think that stuff's useful, but you know, Chrome itself is kind of a de facto standard when it comes to rendering web pages and everything. So Microsoft taking that stuff and using it for their own browser makes sense. There's no proof of this, I guess, but I still sort of feel that a version of Chrome without the Google will make sense to some portion of the population. Now, I say that, I know. And the reason that makes no sense really is Brave and Opera and probably some other browsers are using it. None of those have a lot of market share, but this is Microsoft. I mean, there is a power of the default. I mean, you could get hundreds of millions of users just by putting it in Windows 10, actually across various Windows versions as well. They do support cross-platform sync. And so if you want to use Edge on iOS or Android, you're getting a first-class experience. It's a great browser. It uses the underlying rendering engine on those platforms that's supplied by those platforms. So Chrome or Safari, depending on which one you're using. You know, we'll see. I mean, right now, you know, Microsoft Edge on desktop has something like 3.42% market share, or whatever, or usage share, I guess. And on mobile, it is nothing. It's under 1%, like 0.2%. It's nothing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. Like, you know what's funny, though? You know what's hysterical? Last week, I got accused of being a, in one of the comments, somebody wrote this huge, long letter to us and how we're Apple apologists. And
we are.
Yeah. We're anti-Android. You and me, both. You and me, not just me. You and me, both. Andrew uses a MacBook every day on the show. Look down. And the guy goes, oops. The guy based his opinion of us somehow as being Apple apologists. And then he realized, as being anti-Apple. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
being anti-Apple. And then goes, oops.
Oh, geez. Anti-Apple. Hmm.
I think because we were praising Android at one point yesterday. But here's an interesting thing, right?
That's silly. I don't understand why people go in these directions.
You can't ever not like what the other person likes, Paul. But here's an example, right? Like, I use Safari every day on my phone if I'm looking something up. I have a Mac. Everything is kind of tied in. I rarely use Safari. But the UI, the user interface for me will probably be more conformed to what I'm used to on the phone. And it'll probably be a better experience because it's super fast. There's nothing wrong with Safari, to be honest. I mean, lack of plugins and lack of extensions and things like that. But if you are the average web browser, if you're using, you know, a web user, you don't need to have, you know, these tools that I use. Like I use a tool called TubeBuddy for Google, for YouTube analytics. I use the Alexa web, ranking numbers. I use this downloading tool to rip videos off. That's a very small fraction of people that need that. I'm surprised that there's no, you know, when it comes to Edge, however, now you're going to be able to incorporate these potentially with the browser because it's running Chromium and you technically could have extensions like this, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I believe Chrome extensions are going to work 100%.
Yeah. So, if I need those extensions and that's what was keeping me in as a Chrome user and now Edge now has it and Edge performs better on Windows and you could show me all those billboards that it's 20 times faster than Chrome, you know, maybe I'm going to stick with this.
I'm definitely interested. Right now I benefit from Chrome's syncing of passwords and bookmarks and things like that to my phone, right? So I like that. You know, you put Microsoft into this equation and how does that change things? You know, obviously you can sync between the browsers to get that stuff over. I assume that stuff would go into my Microsoft account now on the it should still sync. It should be a different sync engine, I guess, but whatever. It would still work on mobile. It would work in Windows. I guess it's good. It's all good. I mean, I think the primary advantage, like you were talking about using Safari, like people who use a Mac and an iPhone and an iPad, probably, you know, using Safari makes sense for those reasons, right? This kind of seamless sync that you get and the handoff capabilities that Apple has. You know, if you use like Windows and Android and you're using Chrome on both, one of the things that's really cool is I can configure, like I sign up for a United account or something and I create a password in an account. And then when I install the Android app for United on my phone, that password goes from Chrome on the desktop to the app on Android, right? And so like that's actually like a really neat benefit of sticking within that thing. And so, you know, how does using the new version of Edge screw that up potentially? You know, I don't know. But I will say that. I mean, you know, iPhone and Android both have their own whatever advantages. I mean, but when you use Chrome across the platforms and you can get the sync down to the apps, right? So you don't have to remember that stupid complex password. I mean, that's a huge time saver.
You know what else is also amazing in Chrome? And we're going back on age. Like, I keep forgetting passwords now, and this was never a problem for me. And Edge,
well, there's a million of them now.
I was seeing Edge stores your passwords. Chrome stores your passwords, and you could actually look up what the password is when you go into the thing. And it, like, I'll give an example. I couldn't remember my Fios password for the life of me. I couldn't remember it. It's been the same password for 2 years. I couldn't remember it. And there's a little button. I can look up in the password manager what my password is.
Yeah, so it's even better than that because it will use the security that you have on your computer to authenticate you.
Yes. Right?
So if you just have a normal login, whatever it is, it will ask you for your password. It's the it's not your your Microsoft account password. It's the however you signed into the computer, which actually is usually your Microsoft account. But if you signed in with Windows Hello with a fingerprint or with your, you know, your facial scan, you can authenticate that way to look at your password. So it's secure too, right? It's if someone was just using your computer and wanted to see your passwords, they couldn't because they would still have to authenticate themselves to see them, right? So it's a really, it's a good system.
No, it really is. I think it's whatever works for you at this point, whatever's the most convenient. And if this Chromium-based Edge browser is extremely convenient for people and it works the way they want it to work, guess what? They may gain a couple points in the market share. And even if, what are they right now with Edge and Explorer? Do you have the current?
Edge on what?
What does Internet Explorer have as market share, and what does Edge have as far as market share?
I don't know. Internet Explorer is probably still in the double digits somewhere, 13%, something like that.
Let's say it's 5. Let's say it's I think it was 3%. Yeah. Let's say 3% for Edge, right? Sure. And this boosts them to
Edge
7%.
Edge is 3-something, yeah.
Okay, then I had that number. Let's say it's 3%. And within 2 years of release, they gain 7. They're up to 7%. It may not seem like it's a significant boost, but you know what that does to revenue? You know, revenue-wise and usage-wise, that's a big jump. So they're not, I don't think Microsoft, I mean, they would love to be in the teens right now with this, but even if they double their numbers, that's progress, and that's maintenance when you're in a world where everything is based on Chrome.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I see it. Paul, we are running out of time, but I do want to talk to you one last thing. I do want to talk about the Azure Connect. Now, a lot of people were asking me, and I was waiting to answer. When we were discussing an enterprise, 4K webcam a couple of weeks ago, we were not necessarily talking about this.
No.
Okay. So everybody freaked out. By everybody, I mean the 5 people that messaged me.
Okay.
And they said, oh my God, is this what you guys were talking about? And honestly, this is not what I was talking about.
No, this is unrelated.
And I didn't want to put words in your mouth and say, no, Paul and I have had conversations about this. This is not what we were talking about. This is not their webcam. This is not a webcam.
This is very much not a webcam.
So this is interesting because the purpose of this is more for as a companion for the HoloLens, right? This could work as a companion. This could also
a hard time understanding the point of this thing. What it does is it collects real world data in real time, and that data includes visual data and sensor data. It can map rooms, including things in rooms. The HoloLens, I can understand what the applications might be. This thing,
I don't understand. The application.
What's that?
The application. I mean, as a companion for HoloLens, this could be remember the old HoloLens demo where the guy was virtually brought in to the space?
Yep.
If you're mapping a room,
Okay. Turn a person in a different location into a hologram, essentially. Yeah. That you would. Okay.
I mean, sure. I would see that, but as far as
this is not a 4K webcam with Windows Hello built into it.
Please say, say it again, loud and clear.
Not the webcam. This is nothing. We did not ever hint at or discuss this product before this show.
Yeah, I was not aware of this, but I.
Yeah,
I'm curious how the application of this is going to be. How much is it? It's like $400.
Yeah, it's not that expensive.
It's not expensive for one. If you're mapping a room, you're most likely going to need a couple of them, right?
Yeah, but again, you know, we're talking about things that are going to be deployed by enterprises. These are pieces of equipment. This is not like we're handing these out like Chiclets to kids. I mean, it's just a, you know, it's a special use device.
Listen, Mary Jo Foley told me that mm-hmm. I have a quota to fill with how many times we say Azure on the show. Okay. We have a quota. We have not hit that quota. We were very bad last year. We did not discuss Azure whatsoever. We have now fulfilled our quota for the year with mentioning Azure on this podcast.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable discussing this word because it's such an enterprise term, but yes, it exists.
Yeah. I think, listen, everything leads to something. And a lot of people were asking me, like, well, why make the announcement? I'm like, this will lead to some other device and it's going to be incorporated in an application further down the road that may be applicable to the consumer market, right? We saw Kinect. We saw what it did. And this is an offspring of Kinect. Maybe if you are going to do an AR based environment and you're a venue and this is what you do, you would get mm-hmm. these and start building this AR environment for the, you know, the example that we gave.
It may help when you're going to put augmented reality like holograms into a room or whatever. You know, one of the things you do with your headset is you kind of map the room so it has an understanding of the topography, right? So when that virtual ball bounces down and hits the table, it knows to bounce off of there because there's a table there. But that's fine for a one-time mapping. What if you move the table 3 inches? Or what if three people come walking through the room and they're doing whatever they're doing? I mean, I suppose you could mount these cameras around, which is how some virtual reality systems do, right? They put camera sensors around the edges of an area. And they could keep track of these moving objects in real time. I guess that's one way you could use it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We'll see what happens.
I saved it
at the end because I did want to say that this is not what I had heard about or what Paul had heard about or what we alluded to about a month or so ago. This is a completely different device. It is not a 4K webcam, guys. For $400, it is not.
Yep.
For all things Paul, go to therot.com. Of course, I want to thank our sponsors as usual, hover.com, Backblaze, and of course, Casper. Guys, if you enjoy the show, help us fund us. Go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us there for our bonus shows. Next week, are we back to Tuesday, Paul?
Yes.
Okay, good. We're back to Tuesday next week. Paul and I will do something interesting for the bonus show. I got to talk to Paul this week also because I do want to do our... Somebody has suggested we do What the Tech After Dark. So on
like
Mad
Baywatch
Men,
at night, Baywatch Nights.
Baywatch Nights.
Are you and I going to solve crimes at night, Andrew?
We could do that. Oh my, that'll be a great show. A buddy cop film? That's excellent.
Yeah. Every episode, I'll be like, I'm getting too old for this shit.
And I'm just passed out drunk at a bar. You just pull me out of the bar. And, you know, it'll be a great 80s flick. It'll be called Paul and the Boy. That'll be the name.
No, you need a better nickname.
It'll be Kitch. Paul and the Hatch.
Paul and the Greek.
Paul and the Greek.
Or Paul and the Packy. Is that
get
a bad
the
term?
Souvlaki out of your ears, Greek.
Yeah. You gotta get yourself together.
Paul and I somebody has suggested, so I do something called Mad Men After Dark where Rich and I do Mad Men. And it's a Patreon exclusive, and we pretty much get drunk and we just talk about the topics at hand. So someone had suggested do What the Tech After Dark, and I think that's an excellent idea for Paul and I to do one night. I believe the last time Paul and I did a show at night was 2011. That is the last time that we did a show at night.
And how is it we did one at night? Why did we do that?
We used to do the show late. We used to do the show around 6 o'clock. We first started doing this. Yeah. And then we've slowly creeped it up earlier and earlier.
Yeah, pretty soon we'll be doing it at 8 o'clock in the morning.
I would love that. Oh, man, that'd be my dream. Get up, coffee with Paul would be like a morning drive time show. So if you want, if you enjoy the shows, and obviously we have a lot in store for you, we've been way more committed in 2019 with our schedule and doing the shows. Now that I'm doing this full time, you could help us out by going to patreon.com/whatthetech. Also, Therot Premium. I always tell people, if you want great information, great articles, great opinion pieces, go to Therot Premium. Paul does an unbelievable job over there. Brad does an unbelievable job. And then that other guy with the hair. He does a good job. I'm envious of that. He's a young, handsome, full head of hair boy.
In front of him.
Whole life ahead of him. Yep. So he's not jaded. He's not ruined by this business. You can go there, sign up for Therot Premium. of course, and everything else. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to us on YouTube. You can subscribe to us. We're everywhere podcasts are available. And we'll see you all next week. Take care.